Okay, this is not about a research study. This is about a new, very innovative model. So sit back and enjoy it. I'm going to go quickly through the slides. Happy to answer any questions. I'm a physician in Boston, been practicing for over 30 years, and I've been working with the homeless for about 20 years. And about 15 years ago, I started this project to reach out to homeless women in Boston who were falling through the very extensive safety net in Boston, still needed to have care. I have no relationships to disclose. So what is the problem? The problem is we have a lot of homeless people in the country. Access to care is hampered by their transience, lack of reliable ways to communicate, mental health, trauma, fear, substance abuse, cognitive dysfunction, and crisis care. Survival needs take precedence. Over-reliance on emergency rooms and whatever is done expediently over planned and preventive care. Under the Affordable Care Act, we've all been introduced to the idea of patient-centered medical homes, but these are practice and hospital-centric, assuming that the patient has a minimal level of functionality. These mainstream patient-centered medical homes and managed care rely on planning ahead, scheduled visits. They're located in clinic buildings requiring transportation and navigation. Their clinical goals are based on broad populations and government guidelines. They're directed by the insurance companies. They pay for billable encounters, not compassionate trust-building steps, which we need in the homeless population. One size fits all doesn't really fit homeless women. Very time-pressured and high levels of expectations of functionality and cognitive and executive function. The care radiates from the PCP office outward and is a very high percent of administrative costs. So if you look at this little cartoon, the PCP office, the medical home, tries to reach out for the patient. But for you and me, if we have questions with our mainstream providers, we go to our family, our friends, we go to the internet, we ask our neighbors, we talk to our church members, we go to the helpers that we know and trust. And that's what we all do. Women of Means offers an alternative medical home. Our services are offered within the patient's own community center. That happens to be the shelter. It is patient-centric. We are the communication hub. We are the support system. Communication flows reliably both ways, and the patient has a very personal relationship and trust with us that has been built up over literally years. We are the same team that's been coming in since 1999. We're volunteer-based. Over 75% of our physicians have stayed more than 5 years. In our medical home, the patient tries to get information from the PCP, but that's usually blocked due to all the barriers that we're familiar with. We become virtually the friends, the family, the neighbors, the church, the helpers that we know and trust, and we can communicate with the patient in the shelter so that there is, if somebody has a hepatitis C antigen, then we can communicate with that person and they don't fall through the information safety net. So we are a medical home of healthcare and human services that bridges the gap between vulnerable populations and mainstream care. We have found that we are a cost-saving option for the homeless and poor women in Boston who have trouble accessing, navigating, and comprehending complex healthcare services, or who need adjunctive care from trusted sources until they can reach a higher functional level. Now, you understand in Massachusetts, we do have universal health care. 98% of our citizens are covered. About 70% of homeless people are covered. They fall through the cracks continuously, and we close those gaps. So we are, in this Venn diagram, we are the very important communication hub. On the left, you have the healthcare context for homeless and poor women and all the things that, all the contexts of their lives, the streets, the shelters, being on the run, closed head injuries, trust issues, cognitive issues, housing, working with different agencies, and so forth. And on the other hand, you have the PCPs, the hospitals, and the community health centers, and including a very robust and very successful healthcare for the homeless program in Boston, which we work with. But again, the women seem to continue to fall through the cracks. So yes, we believe that there is an important role for an embedded entity in the community that you're serving, and we are that embedded entity. And so we are a medical home without walls. So what other vulnerable persons would this model apply to? It could be other homeless groups. It could be families, men, veterans. We actually go to 7 family shelters, migrant workers, illegal immigrants, autistic children, developmentally delayed, and so on and so on. We basically feel that you can adopt this model to other groups. Our mission, which was designed in 1999 by myself, was originally to improve the lives of women who are homeless or marginally housed through quality healthcare, education, and advocacy. We were incorporated in 1999. We're a 501c3. Our volunteers are physicians from the community, and we have a small staff of paid nurses. It's all free walk-in care given on-site in Boston area shelters for women and children. We're entirely supported by grants and private funding. We don't bill. We don't register. We don't care about their real names. We do 10,000 visits a year, and we save Massachusetts millions. Our care is safe, respectful, very accessible, and free. We go to 8 shelters. We have 21 volunteer clinicians representing a variety of specialties, including psychiatry and dermatology. We have 7 paid part-time nurse case managers, which we pay very badly, by the way, and we don't provide benefits. But we have the most dedicated team that you can possibly imagine. We use over-the-counter medical supplies to connect people to us and to build trust in the first steps. We have a mobile lab. We do pregnancy tests. We do urine tests. We do diabetic treatment. We have asthma treatment on-site. We have asthma nebulizers. All of our communications and care coordination between the shelters, healthcare providers, health centers. We work with over 500 different primary care providers in the Boston area. We use volunteer healthcare companions as patient navigators, and in 2013 we are introducing a community health worker to our model. We have been doing research since 2008. Our results show that we provide a very valued healthcare access choice for homeless poor women and families. There's a very strong demand for carved out services for women. Many in the healthcare system turn to us for help. We improve lives, save lives, reduce the social burden. We have successfully targeted services for elderly homeless women. In Boston, nearly 10% of the homeless women that we take care of are over 70. We save money, and we have a very robust medical education program. We've written a curriculum, and we supervise over 100 medical students, medical residents, and nursing students every year. So our premise is that we believe that the best care for vulnerable persons, and this is all vulnerable persons, is one that includes a medical home without walls, that is physically located within the community of persons that it represents, even more downstream than community health centers. We believe that healthcare personnel embedded in the community are the best positioned to be the communicators of health issues between the vulnerable persons and mainstream healthcare services because they understand and speak the language of both worlds. As the nation expands to design and execute patient-centered medical homes, Women of Means stands to prove that the larger healthcare system also needs to include medical homes without walls to better serve the ones who continue to fall through the cracks. We serve homeless women and children, but we believe that this is generalizable to other populations. So all of our care is in and around shelters. Patients sign up first come, first served. There's no time limits. Acute and urgent care is given, chronic disease management, lots of support, health promotion. We're very casual and approachable. We wear street clothes. The same physician-nurse team comes in every day of the week. We fulfill multiple roles. The clinical and care and case management is done by everybody on the team, so we minimize the silos that usually happen. There's also a person-to-person handoff to minimize gaps in care. We don't send an email and expect someone's going to read the email and have something happen. We actually call that person and we give a personal communication to make sure that if somebody is having trouble and they can't be reached, that the next person picks up the ball. So we are the communication hub for the primary care providers, the hospitals, and the other agencies. And we use the healthcare companions and the community health workers to round out our team. Our key elements are consistent, reliable presence in the same shelters, same days of the week, week after week, year after year. Easy sign-up anonymously and confidentially, real names not required. Opportunities for privacy, but open access is less scary for some of the women. It's a trauma-informed model. We also have what we call drive-by encounters for the people who aren't quite ready to make that trust relationship. Just give me some Tylenol for a headache, just give me some cough drops, and then they come back. We are the eyes and the ears looking for the quiet ones and the ones who are isolating themselves. And we, of course, have, as I said, the trauma-informed model. We also do something for these women that very few people do in medicine. We are allowed to be observed before we interact with the patient. And you know yourself, you can't go to your doctor's office and watch them interact with patients to see how nice they are, how respectful they are, how they treat their patients with dignity. But the women get to watch us first. And over time, we have seen people come up to us and say, well, I was watching you for the last year, and I see that you're very nice to your patients. And that's enormous for them. We know that just seeing us there is very comforting to them. And the over-the-counter medicines are used for building trust, for teaching, for touching in a non-threatening way. And the mobile lab and asthma care reduce emergency room use. So we actually believe, and we are pursuing this, that we fulfill all the elements of have for NCQA for a medical home. And in fact, I won't go through all these different data bullet points, but the one thing that we're starting to do is track what we call milestone events. And this is a way of measuring and tracking the performance of our impact with the women. So what is a milestone event? So between January and June of this year, we documented about 13 milestone events a week. They came to us instead of using the emergency room. They followed through on our advice after acute illness as we asked them to. So we gave them some antibiotics and said, come back and see me in a week. Those were for a transient population. This is huge. They did come back and see us. We got them a cell phone, which you can get through the domestic violence program in Massachusetts. We would take them to their medical appointments, teach them how to find their doctor, program their PCP's number into the cell phone, and then they started making their own appointments. They agreed to care previously refused, and they were accompanied to an appointment they would otherwise miss. Very important changes in behavior that show that people are actually motivated to change their health. In the last year and a half, we did a wonderful survey project that was funded through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And in fact, Kim Williams, who is our project director, who's here, is talking about this in detail at 10:30. It's session number 3155, and it's over in MCC West, and I encourage you to see that. But it did look at our model. We looked at 102 patient surveys, 72 non-participant observations, and 235 case reports. The results, again, I'm not going to go into this. I'm not the researcher. I'm the doctor. I just do qualitative stuff. Our services, obviously, were documented in terms of the acute and chronic care we do, the social assistance, the support, the case management, a very vast range of services. I mean, everything from soup to nuts, everything that belongs in primary care in the community. As a primary care doctor in the hospital, I'm relegated to a certain things, but when you are poor and homeless, you need to have food, you need to have safety, you need to have protection, you need to, you know, have someone that you can call on. What we did find was that longer encounter times allowed us to give more case management, medication coordination, social assistance, and that improved outcomes in terms of lowering blood pressure and lowering blood sugars. The majority of patients had a PCP of record, and we learned from the PCPs that we are a valued and trusted adjunct. The women and the PCPs consider women and means a valued part of their healthcare team. So in terms of what was some of the experience that was cited in this survey, the satisfaction that the women cited was they certainly had enough time with us. Most of their health problems were addressed. We certainly did help with anxiety, stress, and depression. And they agreed with these statements that they benefited from regular check-ins. They were able to more closely monitor their health, had a reduced dependency in emergency rooms, preferred our services to other places. We learned to pay more attention to their health, and that life overall has improved. So the impact of what we're doing is enormous. I don't need to go into every single point here, but you can see that there's enormous impact in changing the behavior, the self-motivation, the self-esteem, and the worldview of the women who have experienced our program. We have short, medium, and long-term outcomes, not only just the sort of increased awareness of their healthcare needs and increased knowledge of the healthcare system, but in improved clinical parameters. This was very important. And you know, over the long term, we were reducing bounce back, where they're able to integrate more successfully into the communication, much more self-healing behavior and self-motivated behavior. You know, and even things like self-forgiveness. I mean, these are women who have just been through the worst of the worst. So our next steps, and this is very exciting for us, this is our big news, that we have, again, we've been struggling along with grants and donations over the last 12 and 13 years, but the components of our medical home model have been recognized locally. First of all, I was named as a Robert Wood Johnson Community Health Leader in 2010. In 2011, I was named a CNN Hero, and I'm very proud of that. But in 2012 now, we have been approached by one of the largest ACOs in Massachusetts, accountable care organizations, and they are contracting with us to do a pilot project that will be launched January 1st. We're going to be taking 50 women who are 65 and older, and we will become their primary care provider. We will provide their primary care right in the shelter, and we will get a per member per month payment from that, and we'll be able to collect metrics on it. The good thing about this is that our primary care team will be comprised of a nurse practitioner, two physician leaders, a once-a-week psychiatrist, and a community health worker. We'll be applying for NCQA certification, and we hope eventually to replicate. So for you, what does this mean for you and your communities? Well, future healthcare delivery models have to include the patient-centered medical home. That's in the Affordable Care Act, but it also has to include a medical home without walls. The medical home is where the patient feels at home, not the doctor. There is a role for embedded clinical and case management teams within community agencies that serve vulnerable populations. We need to deconstruct the roles of the clinical team members to reduce silo care. The components of healthcare must include housing, transportation, safety, access to food and shelter, and a key support person, and often that person is a community health worker or a probatora. There are critical roles for these adjunct healthcare providers, the navigators and the promotors and the community health workers. The medical home without walls concept and infrastructure now has value to ACOs who increasingly recognize the importance of community leaders. If we can get money for the infrastructure that we provide, the experience, the trust, the relationships with these women, we can not only save money, but we can say to the whole healthcare system, we have a better way of doing it. It's going to reduce costs, and it's going to improve care. Thank you very much, and I put my email address on there if I'm happy to answer any questions and talk to people more about this in detail. Thank you. Yes, sir. Right, so the question is about outreach counselors and reaching out to people on the street and so forth. So the nurses that we hire are nurse case managers. And so everybody takes on these roles. So we do not only do the clinical care, we also do the case management in the shelter and out in the streets. We meet people where they need to be met. So it's really a very broad reach in terms of what we do. But we've built that into the nurse case manager role over the last few years. And now we're adding another layer of that, which is the community health worker role. But yes, clinical outreach has been already part of the model. Did that answer your question? Okay, yes, Lillian. Right.
Yeah, their training is medical, and so how do you deal with that with the physicians who are doing this, and what percent of their time is spent doing non-traditional medical work?
Right.
Okay,
so let me, just before I forget, because I'm over 60, so the physician role, you know, what they do, and they're doing a lot of non-sort of traditional clinical kind of stuff, and how do we keep them engaged? So the model is built on volunteerism. We really wanted to bring, you know, I'm a child of the 60s. I wanted to bring volunteerism back into the medical profession. So these doctors all have jobs in the community where they can go and do their managed care thing. They come to us because they want to give back without any red tape. So we have enormous retention among the doctors to come in and do this work because they just like being doctors. They just want to take care of people. So they don't mind doing the non-traditional clinical things because, again, the philosophy is that you really have to be sort of own the problem and pass it off to the next person. So the way the volunteer schedule works is that there's a doctor, like there's a Monday doctor, a Tuesday doctor, a Wednesday doctor. The nurses are there all during the week. So the nurse becomes the continuity day to day. And so the doctor is doing doctoring whenever they need to be doing the sort of higher level clinical intervention. But the nurses do a lot of the sort of less, in sort of rigorous kind of stuff, although they are the important continuity. Where using the doctor really impacts is when, if we have to call somebody to hand somebody off. So if I call the health center, I mean, we've had lay people call health centers and try to call the doctor and reach them. Doctors like to hear from other doctors. I mean, it's what, part of the snobbishness of medicine, that if I pick up the phone and call on behalf of this person, I say, I'm Dr. Means, I'm here to make sure that this person gets their blood pressure followed up because it was way too high today. I'll probably get a response as opposed to either one of my nurses or one of the lay volunteers. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Or if I go to the hospital with that person and try to explain in medical terminology, that it makes an impact that way. So the doctors don't feel that they're sort of playing down their license when they're in our program. They're so happy to be to just do medical care, to talk to people, counsel them, provide the services, and also use their voice as a powerful entree into the medical mainstream.